Welcome to the Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
And today's episode is going to be a bit of a heavy topic.
It is, yes.
A couple of months ago, we were reading an article from an author from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about this article that we read that was really emotionally written.
Yeah.
So we thought that we would spend some time on a podcast talking about it because it is certainly an issue that many parents and family members have to deal with from time to time.
Right. It's an issue we deal with on a regular basis. This is the man who wrote the article is the sports writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And he wrote it's about his son.
Right.
While he was a student at the University of Georgia, developed an addiction to drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's about their family's journey through the addiction of their son.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this episode, it's not specifically about addiction or drugs and alcohol, but what the title of this episode of The Mental Breakdown is Guessing Wrong.
Right.
And one of the quotes from the article was pretty moving. The way that this situation came down in a very abbreviated manner is that the father, the author of the paper, got a call from his son, and the son was telling him about his difficulties and his problems and revealing this addiction problem. And the father told him to, you know, just get done with your finals. And then we'll deal with it afterwards.
Right.
You know, and the quote in the paper is, "Take your finals first." Those were the dumbest words that ever came out of my mouth.
Right. Yeah, because the son called his dad at the end of the semester and suggested to his dad that perhaps he should take a medical leave, that things weren't going well that semester, and that perhaps he should take a medical leave. The son knew he was struggling with substance abuse. And that was the dad's comment that, well, let's take your finals first. And but both Dr. Bernie and I were struck by dad's response when he said the dumbest words that have ever come out of my mouth.
Right.
And that sort of produced in us a desire to address this topic because many parents
say things just like that.
Say things. In fact, the parents on either side of this microphone have probably said things just
right.
like that.
Absolutely.
We're all guilty. Let's just get through the semester and then we'll deal with it.
Right.
That struck both of us, both as parents and as clinicians.
Right. And part of that is because we see the end of the semester, or in his case, the finals. That's a terminus. That's the end. So all we got to do is get to that end, and then we have time. We have some flexibility so that we can deal with things. And sometimes we have to put some of that aside and think about the immediate. And so while we're thinking about this, and you know, let's just kind of start from the beginning. And the beginning is that there are situations, whether we're parents, whether we have loved ones in this situation, whatever the case may be, there are situations when others that we care about and that we need to help say things that trouble us. They say that they have an addiction. They say that they want to run away from home. They threaten or talk about suicide or feeling like their life isn't worth it anymore.
Or they're being bullied. You know,
or they're being bullied.
Picking on them at school, or they don't feel good about themselves, or they don't like the way they look, or I'm too fat, or I'm too skinny, and all these things that we hear.
Right, right. And the way that most of us handle these situations is, if we do it from a rational, logical perspective, as opposed to an emotional perspective, we'll talk about that way in a second, but if we look at it from a rational analytical perspective, we try to see what else is corresponding with that. So it's not surprising, I suppose, that you'll get things like these kinds of threats around the time that there's big demands. So, you know, at the times around final exams, like was the case in the paper.
Or holidays.
Right. Or when big projects are due at school, or when massive shifts are happening at work. So there's certain things that we can look at and we can say, okay, you know, this person is saying these things, but it's probably related to this acute stress episode. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that I'll go ahead and say that now, because we'll talk about it more in a minute. Unfortunately, when we look at it from that analytical perspective, we often dismiss it.
Right.
We often say, you know what, finals first, you know, and then we'll deal with it.
Mm-hmm. First, you have to handle your responsibilities. I can hear myself as a parent saying,
right.
No, you got to be tough and you got to, you know, you got to be strong and you take care of your responsibilities. Then we'll deal with all that stuff.
Right. And we talk to parents week after week whose kids talk about whether it's bullying at school or being completely overwhelmed at school. We have patients, juveniles or teenagers and children who, you know, sit in our offices and cry because they don't want to go to school because they're completely stressed out about something that's happening there. And we work to push them through those things. We help them cope with that stress. We help them deal with those frustrations so that they can continue, because the reality is that oftentimes in these scenarios, there are consequences at school. There are consequences at work and social consequences and things like that. And so we have to be very cognizant of how all of these different things intertwine, how, you know, a decision for this is going to impact all of these other areas of life. But really what it comes down to is there's really only two choices that we can make as the parent or as the loved one of a person who's making these statements. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it just comes down to two options. Either we believe that they are idle threats, or they're, I don't like the word lies, but they're lies, or their person's making them up, or the person is saying these things with the idea of escaping as opposed to them being authentic or real.
Right.
There are things that are being said to just meet some other goal. So you have the one side that is that they're not true, and the other side that these threats are very real. Especially when we use the word threats, just to be thinking about like suicide and running away and doing drugs and those kinds of things. That, you know, either it's true or it's not true.
That's true. And what Jeff Schultz is the is the writer, he's the sports columnist that we're talking about. Jeff Schultz mentions in his article that his son made many of these statements, and he thought, well, are they that different than any other teenager? I mean, his understanding was this is the way teenagers talk. This is the way all kids act. This is the way all teenagers act. You know, they get depressed and they get discouraged and they get down. So he saw this as normal teenage variance,
right?
Normal teenage behavior,
right?
Okay, normal teenage thinking. What you're suggesting is that when our children bring these things to us, we really have, it's like a little decision tree where, should I take this seriously? Are they really hurting? Are they really in trouble? Should I take it seriously and do something about it, or should I just ignore it?
Right.
Because they're just seeking attention, or they're just trying to get out of something and they don't want to accept their responsibilities.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing is that, you know, Jeff Schultz is correct. I mean, some of these things are things that a lot of teenagers say, a lot of children say, especially in situations where similar comments in the past have elicited a particular or preferred response from the parent.
Right.
You know, if I say, if I have a test in algebra tomorrow, and I know that if I tell my mom, "Mom, I have a migraine," I'll get to stay home from school tomorrow.
That's the most common. I don't want to go to school today.
Right.
Should I take that seriously? Are you really sick or not?
Exactly. And so, you know, part of this, and again, we'll get to this in just a few minutes in a little bit more detail, but part of it is we really have to know our kids. You know, the patients that we work with, you know, many of the patients that we work with, we've known them for a very long time.
Right.
And once you get to know a person at that level, you begin to be able to gauge a little bit better. Now, you may be sitting there thinking that as I'm saying that, Mr. Jeff Schultz, well, this was his son. He surely should have known him.
Right.
Well, how well do we know our kids? You know, I think that a lot of us believe that we really know our kids. And then, but at the same time, how many times have you said, I can't believe he did that?
Right. That's right.
That's completely out of character for him. I can't believe that he would say something like that. Because there are many times when we have this image of our children on one level, but there is a lot of other things going on that we really have no idea about.
And there are sides or facets to our children that we don't know about. I mean,
right.
I often think my daughter's friends probably know more about her in many respects than I do.
Right.
Because she's talking to them and confiding in them in ways that she's not confiding in me.
Right.
So I know her friends know things about her that I don't know and never will know.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and we hear about these kinds of situations all the time. Parents who believe that they're very close to their kids.
That's right.
There was a case here in Lakeland, Central Florida, last year, or within the last couple of years, I can't remember the date, but where a middle school girl mm-hmm. Committed suicide.
Right.
The mother was close with the daughter. They had a good relationship for all that we know.
As far as we know.
And the girl had a history of being bullied that the mother right. thought had been addressed.
Right, right.
But it hadn't.
Yeah, mom thought, and probably she did. She probably did everything she could have done under the circumstances.
Right.
And we all assumed that it had been addressed.
Right. And then, of course, afterwards, we find out, oh my gosh, you know, this is still going on.
Right.
This is, you know, the teenage girl was putting on the good face. She was, mm-hmm. she seemed happy. She seemed rather content, at least when she was at home. And, you know, sure enough, we find out that there's this horrible, pretty significant, severe bullying still happening.
And that's why I hate this girl. I hate the phrase, she manned up. You know, let's man up.
Mm-hmm.
And the other phrase that I absolutely abhor is put your big boy panties on. Put your big girl panties on.
Right.
That's such a horrible thing to say to somebody like a struggling teenager.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're talking about saying those things to tell them to, as a way to deal with
right.
whatever stress they're dealing
man
with.
Man up, you know, right. deal with it and all that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know,
because that's what that girl was doing. She was
right.
she was putting on a happy face. She was saying, I can handle this. I'll take care of it. I can do this.
Right.
She was putting her big girl panties on.
Right. And part of that is because we as adults, or many adults, we attempt to or sort of deliberately minimize stress and situations mm-hmm. that kids today are experiencing. By comparing it to the experiences that we had
right.
when we were in school.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, the situation that children and teenagers are experiencing in school and in life now is very different than we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won't get into the whole thing about the academic stress and pressure and things like that, because we've talked about that plenty in previous podcasts, and we talk about it on our other podcast over at mm-hmm. Paideia. Mm-hmm. We talk about that plenty. However, when it comes to social stresses, when it comes to relationship issues, things today are very different than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Social media has a huge, tremendous, immeasurable impact on social relationships that, you know, we didn't have 15 years ago.
You know, you talk about the generational difference.
Right.
That, you know, I always say in my talks, you know, what computer did you use when you were in school, or what video games did you play? Or
right.
You know, but it's not even generational anymore.
No.
There are, if you, when was the iPhone? When did it come out? 2004?
Yeah, something like
okay.
that.
So what that means is that if you have a child who's 24.
Right.
When that child was 14, the iPhone hadn't been invented.
Right.
So now you have a child who's 16.
Exactly.
And you say, well, your brother didn't get an iPhone when he was your age. That's because we didn't have iPhones then. All we had were flip phones.
Right.
And to deny a child a smartphone today is very different than denying a child a smartphone even 5 or 6 years ago.
Right,
okay?
right.
It's a completely different thing within within a generation. You don't even right. have to go across generations.
Right.
Just take a 10-year difference in siblings is a completely different situation.
Right.
And to say, well, your brother didn't have an iPhone when he was a junior in high school, so why should you have one?
Right.
Because the world is completely different now.
Right. And you know, obviously this isn't an We're Apple endorsement.
But yes, let me add that.
But at the same time, the issue is that the reality is that there are social consequences for not
having
a smartphone.
That's right.
And, you know, sure, certainly, absolutely, we can prepare our children for that. We can give them the rationale. We can give them the appreciation for that. And many kids who are very solid and stable and have that good intrinsic foundation, mm-hmm. they can manage that very well.
Right.
Other kids can't.
Right.
They can't handle the being ostracized or being left out.
They're going to be left out. There's a world that occurs on smartphones.
Right.
It's a social network.
Right.
That occurs in smartphones. It doesn't occur anywhere else.
Nowhere else.
And if you don't have a smartphone, you're not part of that world.
Right.
You're immediately going to be isolated and left out.
Right. And again, some kids will do just fine with that. Others will be potentially damaged by that.
And you better know which one is in your house.
Right.
Right.
And again, that comes to back to you have to know your child.
Right.
And the second step to that, or maybe the prequel, the preface to that, to knowing your child, is accepting your child. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that I think a lot of parents do that really or probably is the main thing that impairs their ability to know their child is that they're judging, really, is what it comes down to. They limit their child's exploration of the world to a very strict and confined area. Mm-hmm. And what happens when we do that, when we don't allow our kids to come and talk to us about sex, we don't let them come and talk to us about drugs. We don't let them come and talk to us about these things without us imposing these strict authoritarian views of these things. Mm-hmm. When we restrict that stuff, guess what? Our kids stop coming to talk to us.
They'll talk to somebody else.
Exactly. Right. And they're mm-hmm. going to talk to somebody else who's probably going to give them either bad information or information that is incongruous to our beliefs.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So we have to have that ability to suspend some of that we have to pound our beliefs into our kids any opportunity we have, because when we do that, we build walls that our kids will not cross.
That's right.
And they begin to hide things.
That's right. We wrote a column last week about raising the child you have.
Right.
And one of the...
Actually, it comes out tomorrow.
Oh, it'll be appearing tomorrow.
Ah, there's a spoiler.
Well, we wrote it last week.
Right.
But it comes out on Sunday. And it's about raising the child you have rather than the child you want. We all have an ideal image about what we want our children to be like when they become
right.
adults. And the first thought is, well, when your children bring this stuff to you, this is not what I want, or this is not where... Doesn't matter. This is the child you have.
Right.
And you can't think about, what do I want 10 years from now? You have to think about, who is this person?
Exactly.
And you have to be thinking about, I need to know this person right now.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so with all of that in mind, again, we go back to, we have two choices when our kid, or when we're presented with information from our child or from a loved one. We've been talking about kids a lot, but it's the same thing if it's our spouse or if it's our brother or sister or our another family member. We have to know them well enough to where when they present us this information, we know that either this is one of those things that I hate to say, it's a cry for help.
Right.
Or it's authentic, it's real.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And when we back up and look at the scenario, when we look back up and look at the situation, those are really our only two options.
Right.
Either when our kid comes to us or our family member comes to us and says, you know what, I can't take this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Life isn't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be better if I was not around anymore.
Right.
If somebody that we love comes to us and says that, we have to decide either they're being truthful or they're... or they're trying just trying to get some attention, or they just want they're asking for help in a scary way.
Right. Either way, though, I mean, whichever one you choose, you have to do something.
Something has to be done.
Right. They're either seeking attention, but we're going to talk about what do we mean by, or what should we do about a child who's seeking attention.
Right.
Or the other is that they really are in trouble, that
right.
they really are in crisis.
Right.
So I think that's a nice place to be right now in this discussion. Is it just, are they just seeking attention? But that doesn't mean that we don't do anything.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I think that's where we're erring as parents is, are they just seeking attention or are they really in crisis?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So when we find ourselves here, we have a few options. Okay. The first option that we have is the option of doing nothing.
Right.
We can, and this is a situation where we hear what's happening or we receive this information, and we say, I would assume we would say, because if right. we're going to ignore it, we're going to assume that that means, okay, this isn't a real threat. Mm-hmm. This isn't something that I have to worry about. We'll just move on and ignore that behavior that we don't want. And what behaviorism would tell us is that if we ignore the behavior we don't want, the behavior will go away because we're not reinforcing it. What we call that is a type 1 error. Or we have the risk, I guess, for a type 1 error. We increase the potential of a type 1 error. And that means that we're increasing the risk that it is a real threat, but we're not doing anything about
right.
it.
Right.
And
that's right.
Let's very quickly think about the consequences to that. If we assume that it's not a threat and we do nothing about it, but we're wrong,
mm-hmm.
what will happen then? Well, the consequences can be pretty dire, of course. The person could act on whatever the threat was or mm-hmm. I don't like the word threat because it makes it seem like they're trying to be manipulative.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The potential of something negative happening is there. Mm-hmm. And so if we have a type 1 error and we make the mistake of ignoring it and saying that there is no risk when there really is one, then of course we run into situations where the person ends up hurting themselves, ends up making horrible decisions that have long-lasting effects, not only on themselves, but on the family.
That's right. And you are guessing. I mean, the fact of parenting is that when children bring this stuff to you, and you're left with this decision of, are they just seeking attention or is there a crisis, you're guessing
right.
as to which one is. I mean, in most cases, in many cases, you're just going to make a best guess.
Okay? Right. And now it may be a 50-50 guess, or it could be a 75-25 guess.
Right.
Depending on
right.
how well you know your child.
Right.
But it is still a guess.
And if you don't get it right, at the very least, your child's going to take his or her concern someplace else.
Right.
And get inaccurate information or advice. At the other far extreme is that they're going to do something dire,
right.
like self-harm. So we need to get this right. I mean, there's a lot of pressure to get it right. How do you make that decision?
Right.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Right, right. Our second possible response to this is something that I think a lot of parents do because, well, hopefully this podcast will help them not do this.
Right.
And that is respond impulsively.
Exactly.
A lot of parents respond to these situations inexplicably with anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we get mad at our kids for, or even, again, our loved ones for saying these kinds of things. And if anything is going to throw a wall up to prevent somebody from coming to you with anything in the future, it's going to be anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime you get mad at somebody for saying something to you or telling you or giving you information, the likelihood of them coming to you again in the future begins to shrink pretty considerably.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be cautious not to respond impulsively with frustration, with anger, or on the other end, with these huge responses with, you know, we've had families that we've read about who, you know, when the teenager will come to the parent and say, you know, Mom, I've been cutting myself, you know. Right. So cutting is something that happens is happening with more frequency. Mm-hmm. Mom, I've been cutting myself, and then immediately she's Baker acted. Okay, well, what is the likelihood of her coming to tell you about those kinds of feelings and those kinds of thoughts again in the future? It's not very high because you're responding impulsively, you're responding dramatically, so. We have to make sure that we don't respond impulsively like that in a way that's going to push them away or put those walls up.
Right. And while we're talking about parental response, keep in mind that fathers and mothers respond very differently
right.
to the same message.
They tend to, yes.
And we're not being sexist here, or we're not, you know, we don't want to be stereotypical, stereotyping the responses. But men tend to solve problems quickly and logically.
Right.
Women tend to solve them emotionally and to serve as a caregiver. So the man wants to be the teacher, the instructor, the disciplinarian, and moms want to be caretakers. So in most cases, be prepared. If the parents are still together, be prepared that a dad is going to respond one way and a mother is going to respond another way. It's normal. That's okay. It's okay
right.
to do that. But please realize that. What you have to understand is your child's getting two messages.
Right.
Okay? And so keep that in mind as you're working with your child. There's nothing wrong with either response. Just know that they're likely to be different because men and women solve problems and react to problems differently.
Right. Yeah. The perfect example of that is with bullying.
Yeah.
You know, how many times has a kid come in and talk to you about bullying, and the dad, when he's accompanied by the dad will say, you know, I told him just to hit the kid back.
That's right.
You know, if a kid's doing that, just pop him in the mouth,
right.
and he'll stop talking about you like
That's
that.
Right.
The mom comes in, and the next session, the mom's like, well, you know, I went and talked to the principal, and
we
got to find some place for him to go so that he can talk to somebody.
Protect your child.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so very different responses
in the same home, right.
But between the parents. And, you know, it's difficult to say who's right and who's wrong because
right.
there are situations where both of those pieces of
they
advice
might both be right.
may work.
But you got to sort this out for the child
right.
because it's going to confuse the child to get those two responses.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, we have to be careful not to respond impulsively because we end up with those kinds of situations.
Right.
I don't know what my son feels about me talking about him on the podcast, but
you I
know,
can tell you
he always brings me such good examples. When he was in middle school, there was a situation where he felt as though he was being bullied by a kid. When he would walk by his desk, the kid would put his foot out and try to trip him. He would knock his pencil and stuff off the desk. And this kid was bigger than him because this was at the time when my son was in sixth grade, and this was an eighth grader in his same class. And I remember him talking about this and you know, luckily for me in our situation, you know, my wife and I, we were sort of on the same page with it. And so we talked to him, we talked to the teacher, we did some things, and the teacher really wasn't doing much about it. And what I did in that situation is, you know, sort of like the dad in the example, I told him, one day Connor came to me and he said, I'm worried that he's going to be hiding around a corner one day in the hallway and hit me when I'm walking by. You know, this was a real anxiety for him. And this was before Connor had his growth spurt. He's grown about 8 inches since then. But I told Connor, I said, you know, if that happens, here's what I want you to, because Connor's a soccer player, I want you to kick him and run to a teacher, run to the principal. And I said, this is what's going to happen. You will probably be suspended.
Right.
We'll have to deal with that when it comes here, but I want you to feel safe. I want you to feel like you're okay. And he says, Dad, I can kick him. I said, if he hits you and you feel like you're, mm-hmm. he's going to hurt you. Yes. Because I want you to be able to get to safety. I said, you know, I built him up. I said, you play soccer, you have a good kick. You know, just hit him in the shins like you would a soccer ball, and then run to a teacher and tell them what happened. We're not going to hide it. We're not going to try to make like nothing happened. We're going to tell them what happened. We have documentation that we've talked to the teacher and nothing has been done. Mm-hmm. But what that did is that gave Connor a feeling of support that, okay, if this happens, my dad's going to be here. My mom's going to be here. They're going to know what happened. They're going to know why I did it. And dad's sort of telling me that if this happens in this situation and I get suspended, right, I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And obviously nothing ever happened. That his worries never happened. And that tends to be the case. You know, we become anxious about things that never come to fruition. Right. But that gave Connor the confidence, and it relieved some of the stress that he was experiencing from this bullying. And truthfully, we didn't hear much more about it for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And when I would ask him about it, he says, you know what, he's not really doing it anymore. He's backing off. I'm not worried about walking down the hallway anymore. But my wife and I were on the same page. Right. And we had a thoughtful consideration, and we kind of went through a series of steps as we did it. We didn't respond impulsively, mm-hmm. Because if I would have responded impulsively, I probably would have said a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. But we thought about it thoroughly, and we had a clear discussion with him about it.
And how nice it is for the child to know that both parents are on the same page.
Right.
You know, that both of my parents are giving me the same advice. And I know that both of them are going to be supportive,
right,
compared to a child who's getting two messages.
Exactly.
And isn't sure what to do about it.
Right.
You know, and I think his resolution, his ability to deal with it is in large measure the support that he felt from both parents.
You right.
know, that we're all together on this.
Right.
And then I feel okay about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, we never really condone violence or anything like that. But, you know, there are situations where a kid needs to know that they can defend themselves if they have to,
right,
because that those situations occur. And the way that schools work, and you know, again, finishing up with Connor's situation, the way that the schools work in reality is that if Connor did kick the kid, he would have been suspended.
Right. In Florida, yeah.
The way that it is here is even if you're defending yourself, you will be suspended.
So,
you know, but we have to, and they teach the kids that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they tell the kids that. And so he felt like, I can't even defend myself.
Right.
So not that that approach is going to be the solution for everyone,
right,
but you have to know your kid well enough to understand what resources they need, mm-hmm. to be able to deal with some of these problems.
Yeah, because your son is an athlete, and so you were able to give him advice that an athlete could execute.
Right.
If your child's not an athlete, don't give him that kind of advice.
Right.
Because he's going to get his clocks cleaned.
Right.
You know? So that's what we mean by know your child. I mean, and you didn't say to your son, hit him in the head. Use your strengths. You knew your son well enough.
Right.
Excuse me. You knew your son well enough to say, kick him because he's a soccer player.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So know your child before you offer that kind of advice.
Absolutely. So finishing our three options and how we deal with it. We had the ignore, which has its consequences, the type 1 increase in the risk of a type 1 error.
Mm-hmm.
We have responding impulsively, and then hopefully through the example I was just talking about, we have those where we're thinking about it thoroughly. We're coming up with a plan right. of how to deal with this. Now, you as a parent sitting out there may think, well, you know, how do I know what to do, or how can I come up with a plan before I know that there's a problem? Well, that's a great question. And I think that we as parents, we have to begin to anticipate some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we tend to live our life sometime with the idea that, oh, things are going well. And so things are going to continue to go well into the infinite future. And then we're taken by surprise when some of these things happen. Well, there are times when there are situations that we should prepare for. For example, as your children are entering into adolescence, we should begin to prepare for how we're going to deal with sex, with our kids becoming sexually active. We need to prepare for the risk of alcohol use and drug use. And we need to have a plan for how to deal with some of these situations.
Right. Curfews, dating.
Right.
You know, all those things are going to be coming up. In pediatrics, we call it anticipatory guidance.
Right.
You know, and your pediatrician will say, okay, now when I see you next year, this is what we're going to be dealing with. So, you know, start to think about it. And you're right. You have to start anticipating. I mean, when a girl is 13 or 14, when do you want your child to date? When is it okay for her to date? When is it okay for her to get in a car with a boy that you may not know? How old does she have to be? So you have to begin anticipating. You know that they're going to experiment or at least be exposed to drugs and alcohol. When they go to high school, they're going to be going to parties where there are kids who are 3 and 4 years older than they
are.
And they're going to be drinking and doing drugs, and your children are going to be exposed. How are you going to do? You prepared for that.
Right, right. And so when we look at some of these common issues that students deal with, we know that there are certain times through their development that these risk factors increase. Mm-hmm. We know going into middle school, there's an increased risk for bullying. There's an increased risk for peer pressure and some of those kind of things. And so we need to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. Once we get through that, now we can move on to the next things, such as driving and dating and sexual activity and curfew and drugs and alcohol and those kinds of things. So we as parents have to be, and I like the word that you used, we have to anticipate some of this so that we're prepared. Mm-hmm. That said, of course, there's always going to be situations where we're taken by surprise.
Can't anticipate everything.
Can't anticipate everything. Mm-hmm. But when you have a general idea of how you're going to deal with these kinds of issues, mm-hmm. it doesn't take a whole lot to adjust them a little bit to a surprising situation. So if you have a clear understanding of how you and your family are going to deal with drugs and alcohol, when your kid comes home and they're talking about having sex for the first time, you know, it's not a huge shift to adjust what you were thinking about with drugs and alcohol to those kinds of relationships.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because you have sort of a model there that you're going to use to adjust to deal with some other things. You know, some of the things that parents really have a hard time with is when kids begin to question their religious beliefs. Because once they get into high school, they begin to get exposed to a lot of other people mm-hmm. with a lot of other religious views. And again, the more rigid we are about those things, the more we cut our kids off and they mm-hmm. stop coming to talk to us. And it makes them question, who am I? And when kids start asking those questions, they need to be able to have a mechanism for dealing with those questions. A lot of these dangerous thoughts come when a kid doesn't have a good answer for some of those questions, mm-hmm. when they don't know who they are. Because when they don't know who they are, they've got to do something to figure that out. And that's when they get into situations where they make bad decisions.
Right.
They make bad choices.
Because they're always going to be getting advice from others.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
We know that. I mean, that advice is just out there. I call it ambient advice.
Right.
It's just kids hear stuff while they're in high school. And, you know, information just gets displayed, gets produced, and they talk about these things with each other, and that's why I call it ambient advice. It might not even come from they might not even know the source,
right?
But this is the information that they have.
Exactly.
So they're always going to be getting advice from others.
Yeah, I remember I did a lecture at a community event. It's been a number of years back when I was working at USF, and I was talking about some of these things and the stress that teenagers go through and everything. And I remember a mother was in the back of the room, and she asked me how old a teenager should be when you start talking to them about sexual relationships. And I said, it kind of depends on the child, but, you know, the earlier you start talking to them, the more confident you can be that they're going to have good information and that, you know, they're not going to be completely influenced by other people. And I said, she says, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous about talking to my kid about sex because he doesn't know anything about it. And I'm worried about what he's going to think. I said, well, how old is your son? And she said, 17. I said, okay, he probably knows a whole lot more than you think he knows. And who knows where else he's getting this information from?
Right.
Because it's probably wrong information. That was right around the time that there was this huge, and I don't know who or how this rumor started, but this huge rumor going around that if you drink a certain amount of Mountain Dew every day, if you're like an addicted Mountain Dew drinker, that as a guy, you become sterile. You can't get a girl pregnant if you drink a lot of Mountain Dew. There's another one that says that...
So that explains why there was a run on Mountain Dew at right. the local grocery store. Okay, I always wondered about that.
And if you're not... if you think that I'm making that up, I have met girls, teenage girls who were pregnant, who says, literally say, I have no idea how it happened because he drinks like almost a 2 liter of Mountain Dew every day. And I said... What are you talking about? What does that have to do with getting pregnant?
And she says, "By ambient advice."
Well, everybody knows that you can't get a girl pregnant if you drink Mountain Dew. I was like, I'm sure that no guy would ever drink Mountain Dew. No adult would ever drink Mountain Dew if that was the case. So, it's unbelievable what information is out there. But when we're not educating our kids about some of those things, that's what happens. That was a very interesting conversation. But
wow.
we kind of went off on a tangent there, but
a Mountain Dew tangent.
But the idea is that we have to communicate to our kids. Mm-hmm. We have to talk with them about things. We have to keep the doors open so that when they come to us with this dire information, with these risky behaviors, mm-hmm. with these what we will view as oh my God kinds of questions and statements, we have to know our children well enough to know if they are authentic or if they just are saying, I need help, please help me. Mm-hmm. Because when we know a little bit more about why they're coming to us with this, then we can respond appropriately.
Yeah, another example and where many parents have gotten into trouble is with drug use. We want to scare our children
right.
into avoiding drugs. And we say, well, you know, if you smoke weed, that's going to be the first step. Or you start drinking alcohol, it's going to be the first step toward addiction. If you start smoking weed, you're going to get addicted. Well, fact is, most kids don't get addicted.
Right.
A small percentage of them do, but most don't. And when you tell your children that if they smoke weed, they're going to become addicted, they know that's not true. Their thought is, my parents don't know about drugs.
Right.
They don't know anything about drugs.
Right.
So I'm not going to listen to them. Because if they don't know that most of my friends aren't addicted, most of my friends who smoke weed aren't addicted.
Right.
If they don't know that, they don't know anything about drugs, so I'm not going to take their advice about drugs from now on.
Right.
So be
right.
very careful about what tactics you use with your children.
Right. Because there are good reasons, obviously,
right.
To advise our children not to use drugs.
Right.
But to try to just use scare.
To use scare tactics isn't one of them.
That's not a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, again, lots of other examples of similar ways in which parents try to use fear as an avoidance mm-hmm. Tactic. And so just be cautious of that. But
and realize, too, that once your children get to middle school and high school, you are no longer the only source of information.
Right.
You are one of several sources, and
right.
you may not even be the most important source.
Right.
So please remember that in addition to your advice, they're getting advice from a number of other sources.
Right, right. Now, so one of the things that we have to address is the issue of what happens if our kid comes to us or our loved one comes to us and says one of these scary statements,
right.
and we respond thoughtfully. We respond to make sure that the person is safe, to make sure that they're well taken care of, and to use the example that we started out today with. When you know your kid is in college and it's just before finals, and he says that he has a drug problem, he doesn't know if he can make it. What happens, or what is the risk, if we respond with a well thought out plan mm-hmm. that says, "Well, you know what, come home,
mm-hmm.
let's deal with that. And these classes, you know, you'll maybe flunk these classes, but we'll fix it later. We will go back later and we will repair that damage by retaking those classes or dealing with that at another time. The consequence to that is what we would call, statistically, we would call that increasing the risk for a type 2 error.
That's the type 2.
And that's where we're saying there is a problem when there really isn't a problem. So this is where, this is those situations that parents seem to fear above all else, where we're letting ourselves be taken advantage of. We are fearful that our kids are trying to manipulate us and trying to get away with something that that we shouldn't let them get away with. And that's a valid argument. But when we put the risk for a type 1 error and put it on one side of the seesaw, and we put a risk for a type 2 error on the other side of the seesaw, which one would we rather, in which direction would we rather err? I always go with erring on the type 2. I would much rather be taken advantage of and be manipulated by my kid than I would try to hold firm and ignore and do nothing because I think he's manipulating and be wrong there.
Exactly.
I would much rather take the risk of a type 2 error.
And this happens all the time.
All the time.
I mean, especially with teenagers. Parents come in and say, well, she's saying this or he's saying this. And I just think it's a big act. I don't think she's really feeling this stuff, you know. And I'm thinking, your child has the potential to kill herself. And you're thinking that it's just for attention.
Right.
You better get it right.
We need to rethink.
Yeah, better get it right.
Right. So in that situation, in those situations, again, we recommend, we try to consistently err on the side of caution.
Absolutely.
Put the plan in place. Even if your kid is trying to manipulate you, I don't want to say who cares, but I want to say...
But you do need to think about, what is your child really going to get? I mean,
right.
Let's, you know, first of all say, well, if my child is taking advantage of me, what does he get?
Right.
It's probably inconsequential.
In some of these situations, he gets a therapy session.
Right.
You know, we're not running him to the hospital for Baker acts or anything like that, but he may get a therapy session next week.
Right. Maybe a day off school.
Right. Sure, he may, maybe he'll fail a test.
Right.
Maybe he'll fail a class, depending on the timing of it and if he's in college and those kinds of things. That damage is inconsequential when it comes to his overall health and her overall well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, who cares about college algebra?
Right.
If you're trying to decide between passing college algebra and having
Hustles.
A daughter,
right.
That's going to still be here and have a relationship with you. So many times, the best strategy is to err on that side of caution and implement your considered plan.
And we will assure you that, let's say your child does take advantage of you and get something. They win. You know, they got to take a day off school. They got to drop a class or whatever. You know, 10 or 12 years from now, when your child is an adult and married and has their own kids, you're going to be laughing about this at a family dinner. And right. And your child will say, you know, remember when I was 16 and I did, you know, and it's going to be,
right.
You can have a good laugh about it.
Right.
Okay? Because if the consequences, in most cases, the consequences are going to be inconsequential.
Right.
Okay. It's just not going to matter that they tricked you into giving them a day off school, or they tricked you into, you know, letting them go someplace, or they tricked you into, they said they were going to one person's house and they went to another person's house.
Right.
That's inconsequential. Whereas guessing wrong can be enormously consequential.
Right. Right. Right.
So yes, err on the side of your child.
Yeah. And one of the things I often mention to the parents and families that I work with is, you know, even if you hold firm and you say, no, you know, you're going to go and you're going to finish this class, you're going to finish this course, whether you like it or not, you know,
right.
You're going to finish this course. What are they really going to get out of that course? You know, they don't want to be there. what kind of effort do you think they're going to continue to put? Even if they're trying to manipulate you and you hold firm and you push them, if they're trying to manipulate you to get out of something, how much effort and energy are they going to put into it when they're being forced to do it anyways?
Right.
So you're really not going to get what you hope to get, even if you hold firm and you play hardball with them.
Right.
So stepping back and looking at the situation and saying, okay, here's where we are. Here's what we need to do. Let's get you the help that you need. You know, let's get you in and talk to a therapist, talk to a psychologist, talk to our minister, talk to our priest, whomever it may be. Let's go talk to somebody who can explore this with you in a safe, confidential, a self-building type of way. Let's get you in there and talk to somebody so that we can see if this really is a problem. And if it is, let's figure out how to deal with it. And if it's not really that problem, maybe there's another problem there that they're trying to deal with, and they're just not telling you that piece.
That's right. So they may be giving you A when the problem is C.
Right.
But so deal with A and try to get to C.
Right. Mm-hmm. And getting help with a therapist or with somebody can help you work through that. Because again, and we say this often, you know, as we become teenagers, as they become young adults, the amount of information that they give you as a parent is going to continue to decrease.
Right.
They're going to let you know what they want you to know.
What they want you to know. Exactly.
It won't be everything. And so, and that kind of brings us back around to working hard to know your child, creating an environment at home where your kids feel safe and secure to talk to you in a way that they are honest and open and truthful and informative and open with you. And
you said something a while ago about you have to sort of develop this model of how you want your family to be and how you want your child. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to deal with your children on an incident by incident basis.
Right.
Where you have, okay, now she wants to date, and now it's drugs, and now it's alcohol, and now it's school, and you're responding to each incident on an individual basis. Decide sort of how you want your family to live, how you want your child to live. And so when you make decisions, your decisions are consistent with that theme.
Right.
Okay. I think that's the most important thing, is you don't get it right on an incident by incident basis. You have to decide sort of globally how you want your child to turn out. And whatever decision you make, you have to make within the context. I think religion probably helps serve that purpose.
You right.
know? Like, if a person, I had a friend, she was Jewish, and her Jewish faith really informed her life. And I asked her a question one time. I said, well, what would your religion tell you to do in this case? And without hesitation, she said, this is what I would do. This would be my decision.
Right. Right.
And so religion has that sort of unifying, influence. You know, it might be, you know, that your family is into sports, and so you make decisions according to that. So,
right.
But whatever you use, try to be consistent and not deal with this stuff on an incident by incident basis.
Right, because what happens when you do that, when you have that those consistent themes, your child or teenager has less of a need to wonder
right.
what they should do, wonder yeah. how my mom or dad will respond to something.
Right.
They will be confident, they will know, and they'll be secure in that.
Because mm-hmm. This is how they were when I was 10, and this is right. 12, and this is 14. And so there's a consistency in your responses.
Right, right. So our take home for that. And remember, the title of this podcast was Guessing Wrong. And we labeled it that because that's what we have to be cautious of.
Avoid, right.
We have to make sure that we don't guess wrong, knowing that anytime we're in these situations, though the odds may shift in one direction or another, many times it is a bit of a guess. And we try to improve our odds as best we can. And we talked about ways that you can do that. But when you're looking at these situations and you're trying to figure out which way to guess, what we encourage you to think about is avoid those situations where you're guessing in a direction solely based upon some temporary, non-critical factor.
Right.
Your performance, your grade in a class, your performance in this particular soccer match, your that particular day of school, does that matter enough that you would be willing to risk making the type of error that could have an effect tomorrow, next week, or for the rest of your life?
Right.
You want to make decisions that are in yours and your loved one's best interest long term. Don't say, well, if you don't pass this algebra class, you won't be able to go to college. Because if by pushing your child to pass that algebra class and they're fragile and they're not able to deal with that stress, they're probably not going to go to college anyways. So it doesn't matter how they did in algebra, because they're not, they don't have the skills necessary to deal with what they're trying to deal with. So we have to listen. We have to attend to our loved ones, our children, our teenagers, and we have to respond in a way that's in their best interest, emotionally, socially, emotionally, developmentally. We have to respond to them, and most importantly, safely. We have to make sure that they're going to keep themselves safe and make good decisions and be healthy.
Right. Right. That's our first obligation.
Right.
Not to produce students, not to produce athletes. Our first obligation is their health and well-being.
Right.
Their safety, health, and well-being.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't lose sight of that.
And when you make decisions based upon that, mm-hmm. what you find is that, again, they will be more open to you. They will talk to you more about what's going on. Right. And you will be more, the odds will shift in your favor that you respond in the appropriate way.
Right.
So
chances are you're going to get it right.
Right, right. So plan, be thoughtful, be prepared, and respond with an open model in your mind, as opposed to a closed off, restricted, no, this is the rules, this is what you have to do.
Right. Because this is what I want you to be like 10 years from now.
Right.
Let's do it. Let's deal with today.
Right.
Okay. The child we have right now.
Right. I mean, how many physicians do you know that failed high school algebra the first time? You know, it happens.
Right.
You know, and what happens today in these things, academics, at school, on the soccer field, those things are repairable.
Right.
We can fix those things.
And they're learning experiences.
Right.
You know, getting all A's, what do you learn? That you get all A's. But you learn, if you read that book, Paul Tough's book, How Children Succeed,
right.
you learn how to succeed through your failures as well.
Right.
You know?
So right.
Don't be afraid to let them fail.
Absolutely. So we'd love to hear from you, what you thought of. Think about these kinds of issues. You know, jump on our blog at thementalbreakdown.com and let us know your thoughts. Send us messages on Facebook. We love to hear from people on Facebook. Just a quick announcement. Next month, January 21st, we are doing a live workshop here in our office in South Lakeland. So if you're in the area, the workshop is going to be on creating motivation. I'm really looking forward to this workshop.
Motivation is a huge problem for adults and students.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So if you go to PACFlorida, PACFLORIDA.com, and click on the workshops tab, you can register for the workshop. We're really looking forward to it. It's going to be held on the 21st is a Thursday. It's going to be we're going to have it that evening,
mm-hmm.
From 5:30 to 7:30. So we're offering CEUs for licensed mental health counselors and social workers and those guys. So really looking forward to that. Also, our newsletter is out, so you can register for our newsletter at PACFlorida.com as well. Just send us your email address, and we will send it to you fresh in your mailbox every month.
Right.
So,
yep.
All right. Well, until next week.
Let's see. The date today is, Miss Cassie told me that we had 6 days left.
Yes.
Until...
Yeah.
The big day, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Counting today. So, all right. So until, so that, yeah, next time will be post-Christmas.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, that when is that? When will we talk to our folk? When will we talk again?
Probably next weekend.
Next weekend?
The day after Christmas.
Got it.
So,
okay.
All right. Sounds so until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great weekend, and we'll see, and a great holiday.
Right. It's good talking to you again.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.